Hello, Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm Megan Marone.
And I'm Christian Tucker. Today we will have another installment of our Triple E's, Education, Entrepreneurship, and Empowerment segment with WOOC correspondent H. Bosch Jr. He will be interviewing Andrew Ollie Willis, president of Local 102 ECWA Construction Union, and Ollie's business partner, Elijah Tillery.
After that, we'll have WOOC correspondent Mark Dunley bringing you information from the Sheridan Hollow Alliance for Renewable Energy press conference, which was held on Tuesday at the state capitol.
Then WOOC correspondent Steve Pierce sat down with the South Carolina quintet, Ranky Tanky, and a group that will be playing at Proctor's Theater on Friday night.
We'll have WOOC labor correspondent Willie Terry with a segment on Black History Month and the intertwining history of labor movements and Black History Month.
And finally, we will have the return of our WOOC youth interns, Lauren Wilson, Aaron Pender, Ariana Young, and Trayvon Vautrin. The youth will be discussing the importance of history and art and why Trayvon is changing up the format of his self-published newsletter, TV News.
But first, some headlines. The Troy Record reports that 6th Ward Councilman Randy Knifka is calling for a series of reforms to the Cohoes Local Development Corporation, an industrial development agency. The agencies are able to hand out tax exemptions to new local businesses to help create jobs. Knifka says he believes both agencies need to be more transparent and that more legislative oversight is necessary.
AP reports that former President Barack Obama's health care law pulled in nearly 11.8 million customers for 2018, despite the Republican campaign to erase it from the books. Nationwide enrollment was about 3% lower than last year. 16 states increased their enrollment. Six of those were carried by President Donald Trump in 2016, while 10 went for Democrat Hillary Clinton.
The Albany County District Attorney's Office has taken over the prosecution of the former Troy Police Union president, who is accused of stealing $6,200 from the union's bank account. The Rensselaer County District Attorney asked Judge Deborah Young to assign a special prosecutor because of conflicts in the case. According to the Times Union, the DA made the request because Aaron Collington, the former union president, is a potential witness in the prosecution of Justin Mann and James White, the Schenectady men accused of killing two women and two children in Lansingburg a few days before Christmas.
Graduation rates are on the rise in the Capital Region and across New York. The increase statewide is slight. 80.2% of New York students graduated last June, compared to 79.7% the year before. In the Capital District, 32 out of 41 districts outpaced the statewide graduation rate last year, with the highest rates recorded at Skodak at 99%, Burnt Hills, Ballston Lake, 97%, Voorheesville, 96%, East Greenbush, 95%, and Niskayuna at 94%. Graduation rates at six districts came in below the statewide average. They are Schenectady at 57%, Albany at 62%, Rensselaer at 75%, Watervliet at 75%, Lansingburg at 77%, and Cohoes at 79%.
Tensions between the U.S. and Russia have escalated after the U.S. killed 100 members of the Syrian army as they approached a military base of Syrian opposition groups. Syria and Russia condemned America's military presence in Syria as, quote, illegal after U.S. warplanes bombed the pro-Syrian government forces. It was the most serious clash involving the U.S. and Syria since U.S. troops began deploying to northeastern Syria in late 2015 in support of Kurdish and Arab fighters against the Islamic State. The end of the battle against the Islamic State has removed the common energy of many of the foreign military forces now based in Syria. While Russia has enabled the Syrian government to reestablish control of most of the country, the U.S. remains in control of a quarter of Syria.
Senate leaders have agreed to a budget deal to avoid another government shutdown. Both chambers are expected to vote on the package Thursday ahead of a midnight deadline for keeping the government open. The fate of the deal is not certain in the House, with both conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats expected to vote against it. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi will vote no due to a lack of agreement on immigration, but she will not pressure other Democrats to reject it. The deal includes a massive increase in military spending to $716 billion, far beyond the president's request. It includes $90 billion in hurricane relief funding to Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico. It will increase debt by $1.5 trillion over the next decade.
For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Up next, we have H. Bosch Jr. back with the Triple E's segment on education, empowerment, and entrepreneurship.
That was...
Bosch sat down with Andrew Ali Willis, who's president of Local 102 ECWA Construction Union, and his business partner, Elijah Tillery.
This is H. Bosch Jr. Today's guest on the show is brother Alex Ali Willis, president of Local Construction Union ECWA and host of the 518 Community Roundtable. Also joining me in studio is brother Elijah Tillery, business agent for the local ECWA. Welcome to the show, brothers.
How you doing?
We appreciate it. Take your
ECWA Local 102. Let's not leave that Local 102 out.
ECWA 102.
Local 102.
All right, Local 102. Yes. Got it. All right, thank you so much, and welcome to the show from me and our listeners. Thank you for stopping by. So let me ask, being that you gave me the proper pronunciation of it, what does ECWA mean?
ECWA is Empower Construction Workers Association. Local 102 is a union, and it's the first of its kind in the Capital District.
Okay. So let's start with you, Brother Ali. And as I always say before I start with a show, let's dig in and make it do what it do. All right? Brother Ali, where's home for you? Where'd you grow up at?
Well, actually, I'm born in Albany, but I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and that's where we developed our talents for the construction trade. So we're bringing that energy back here to Capital Region because we noticed that there's a technology drain, and we have less than 1% of the construction industry. This is the place for us to get our community back, back in order to start to build and develop the wealth that we need, that net worth. Mm.
So, all right, once you got back here, why did you get involved with this particular cause?
Well, for the past 30 years, construction and politics has been our focus. And what I noticed here, we always found so many individuals that seemed downtrodden and, reaching out for opportunities. So the opportunities that were open for us in the construction industry were always halted, or the obstacle always came into play, like, hey, you guys don't have the training. So, I know over the last 30 years, we worked on developing those certifications. So I said, we got to bring that to this region, because too many of our brothers and sisters in the communities are having a hard time getting evicted, trying to find gainful employment. And when you actually look at those unemployment stats, those are unemployment stats for individuals that are either in the industry or have jobs and they're transitioning. But those unemployment stats really do not involve our black community. Because if you're not employed and you're not looking for work because you don't have the assistance or the type of education or mentorship to get you into the trade, you're not even considered in those stats. So Albany, our unemployment for our black community is running right now around 35%.
Wow. Total That's shocking. Different number That's shocking. Than you see. So let me ask you this, Brother Ali. What's your background?
Multifaceted.
Most black men are, right?
I grew up.
We got to sing, right? Act and dance, right?
Yeah. Well,
totally understood.
When you talk about my skills or what I bring to the table, first of all, I bring to the table survival skills from the School of Hard Knocks, which is operating in the city, Brooklyn, in the streets, trying to find opportunity, after high school, trying to make a way, trying to feed my family. And then opportunities opened up. I worked on Wall Street for 10 years
with
a lot of the broker, Well, I was actually a supervisor in the operations of brokerage houses like Dean Witter Reynolds, Shearson Lehman Express. And,
so you were around the big money, and you saw how the big money moved from hand to hand.
Right, right. And that's what allowed me also to see a vision, you know, that if we get the proper credentials to break into this construction industry, and we know now how money moves. See, most people don't know how money moves. After slavery, we were never re-educated on financial aptitude or financial, you know, education on how that process really works. So then after that, I started working with some local politicians. As a matter of fact, the politician or the assemblyman that I worked for, his name was Mr. Wright, William Wright, in East New York.
Okay.
And there were a lot of other individuals that I, you know, had contact with during those years growing up, like Charles Barron and Hezekiah Walker was a instrumental piece to the community. It was just so many people that worked together. It's many more.
Great,
you know?
Great.
And then we started to veer off into the construction industry, and that was in 1999, and we've been in the industry ever since.
Great, great. So let me move over to Brother Elijah. Where's your background and where'd you grow up? Because, you know, we know a little bit about each other.
Well, my background is Albany, New York, where I grew up at. And my involvement is really a selfless issue because after coming back to the community after my boxing career, it would be, you know.
And that was professional boxing career.
Number four in the world in cruiserweights, number 11 in the heavyweights. That's the peaks that I reach.
Okay.
And
I want to say you did the 518 proud. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. But, you know, to be selfless, I said either I can be selfish and teach boxing or I can be selfless, man, and, you know, check out the impulse of the community, man, when it comes to, like Ali was talking about, jobs and, you know what I'm saying, employment, et cetera. You know, and the injustice that's been a perpetuation, man, of the status quo. Up to this point, I mean, what you're talking about, 30, 40 years, man, of oppression, man. And this oppression has become blind, man. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas, you know what I'm saying, guess what? It's something that's going to be done the next year, so let's keep it going. By all the politicians that came, you know what I'm saying, I hate to say it, but I'll say it on the air, the majority of them were sellouts. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They sold the community out.
So let me ask you this then. What's your goal as a business agent?
My goal as a business agent, man, is to try to, you know what I'm saying, get as many contracts as possible, man, for ECWA Local 102, man, for the community, for the people in our community who are willing to work, okay? It's to amalgamate and consolidate, man, all the various construction, you know, industry or whatever when it comes to, you know, providing our, you know, community with jobs, man, and viable contracts and getting them involved in the union and letting them know what a union really means, not, you know, blocking them out like these unions are doing right now, AFL-CIO, you know what I'm saying, and all these other different, you know, entities that's really blocking the black community out because, you know, it takes 1,000 hours, man, for you to get a book. Usually what they do is they, you know.
And for people who don't know and our listeners who are not familiar, explain a little bit more about a book and what it means.
Well, a book is like, you know, it's the hours that you put in your craft. You know what I'm saying? And you can't get that book completed until you get them 1,000 hours.
And what does the book enable you to do once you obtain it?
The book enables you to be, you know what I'm saying, portable. You can go anywhere, you know what I'm saying, with your trade. You know, and plus, it gives you all your, you get all your, you know what I'm saying, your fringe benefits. You get everything that's coming to you, your 401k,
great,
you know what I'm saying, you know, and if you, and your pension. And if you don't complete that book, then that money just goes to them. You know, them contractors that you sign with or them organizations that you sign with, the union, it don't go to, you know what I'm saying, you and your family, what you should be doing. And I think what Ali started, my president, is that he started, you know what I'm saying, a viable, you know, union where, you know what I'm saying, you can actually see them dollars, you know what I'm saying, see that money, you know what I'm saying, we're going to invest it in things, health insurance, things that you need right today.
Great.
You know what I'm saying? And it's not going to be no taking your money, you know what I'm saying, and using it for other things and not giving you the work. We're going to try to keep these individuals working, man. That's why we're teaching the AEL core curriculum and other programs.
Okay, so what's some of the challenges you've been faced with?
Well, some of the challenges is that they don't want to let go of, you know what I'm saying, the status quo, man, the perpetuation, man, of what they've been implementing over all these years. So they became so comfortable in it that they even forgot about us. You know what I'm saying? Forgot about it.
Well, that's, you know how it is. And we last hired, first fired.
Exactly. So the thing about that is not even so much as last hiring now, because if you, you know, because if you know how to clean up, then you know you'll get hired, but as a laborer. Mm-hmm. But you won't get into no union. Plus, they have things called pre-apprenticeship program, which is no such thing as a pre-apprenticeship program. And I didn't know anything about that until my head man, Ali, he put me on to all these little things, these integral things, man, that we really don't understand when it comes to the industry. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need, man. We need knowledge, man, you know what I'm saying, on how to understand the languages and the things that they use. Because when they say pre-apprenticeship program, people are happy, oh, pre-apprenticeship.
Right.
And you never see apprenticeship.
So that leads me back to Brother Ali. Is this community, is this area poised for a new day in what you guys are doing?
Well, yes, we're poised for this this new day and this journey. And, you know, it's not like we have a choice, because the city has an economic plan. The school board, the nursing home, all these other projects you see going up in Albany, Troy, Schenectady, Rensselaer, Saratoga, right? Those projects, by and large, the majority of them, those are taxpayers' dollars. And in them putting those monies into those projects, it shows that they're using them to stimulate our economy. Mm-hmm. But when we look around, their projects are working. Their plan is working. But we find out that there's no place for us.
So let me ask you this then. Has anybody else succeeded in what you guys are trying to do?
Well, there have been individuals in this region that have made some strides, but to the level or the magnitude that we bring to the table, no. Here's why: because none of them have had a pre-approved apprenticeship program. Our apprenticeship program is a NYSHA registered or certified program. We are one of the 16,000 NYSHA training providers. So we have a master trainer. We have in this region already trained 13 craftsmen and women, right, to help teach in the different trades. Also, we established a union. We know that even when some of us did have exposure to apprenticeship programs, the union still wouldn't hire us, because you have to have union participation. So we set up our union, ECWA Local 102. We're a national organization. We're here in New York, right? We're here in Albany. We're in New York. We're in Chicago. And thus far, we train over 7,000 individuals.
So what sets you guys apart from all the other unions out there?
Well, number one, our mission or our core commitment, which is to community. See, a union, which most people don't recognize, is jurisdictional. So even though you have the international and the national, they're still made up, right, of locals. So a local union represents the community. It's a band of workers that come together for better working opportunities, better working environment, and job opportunities. So if the unions that you see now, 190, 12, 2, all these other unions, DC9, all these unions that you see, if their bench does not reflect our community, then we know that they don't have our best interests at heart, because a bench is a local, right, a local group mm-hmm. of people that come together. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason, our commitment to the community, to advocate for the community, because we're being left out of economic development.
Great. So I have a few more, because first of all, we got to get you back. You guys are deep, man. I feel smarter already with just the knowledge. I mean, you dropped, talking about dropping it like it's hot. I mean, this is great. How has the city of Albany been supportive to your cause?
Well, the city of Albany thus far has not been supportive. The common council members in Albany,
the capital district as a whole,
they have not been supportive. I'm talking about the common council members. I'm talking about the county legislators. I'm even talking about the mayor. Every time you see her on television, she talks about a sanctuary city. What is a sanctuary city? It's bringing in immigrants and other individuals, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing. But if you have your local black community that's starving and dying, what part of inclusion is that for the community?
Good point.
No one, and this is a fact, no one has even walked in the door, not minister, not community leaders. The only two that we had so far was Celeste Knight and Ira have come through and given us some assistance.
And
but for now, to date, no one has even come through with a pack of paper. No one has even come through and said, well, what are you working with? Let's get together and put something to this puzzle.
That leads me to my next question then. How can people reach you, and how can they help your cause?
Well, everybody knows where we are because when we got our location, 68 Grand Street, up, the first event that we had there was the Mayoral Forum. So everyone already knows where we are. Spectrum News was on, you know, on top of the event. So everybody knows we're 68 Grand Street in Albany, right off of Madison. So all you have to do is, you know, come in. Our email is info, at ECWALocal102.com. And then telephone number to be reached at is 518-209-9539.
Okay. And real quick before we close out, and like I said, I got to get you brothers back because this is just too much to cover in a short segment. Where do you guys see this moving in 2 to 3 years, this movement, this union that you've started?
Well, in two to three years, I see a vibrant inner community. I see all of the lower wards moving forward. And the reason why I say that is because there are at least $1 billion worth of projects at present operating in our local region. And now that we have these skills and we have the training, we have the apprenticeship program set up, we have the union that is committed to helping our community get on these jobs, our young men and women. We know they're going to come up off of the street. And we have, so far, we have pulled in 1,400.
Wow.
So I know that we're going to have an impact because at one point in time, I know our officials are going to sit down and say, hey, they've shown up. They're ready.
I just want to say before I close out, sometimes you have a guest where all you have to do is just sit here and learn. Brother Ali, Brother Elijah, you guys were those guests today. All I had to do is sit back and learn. This has been a true education. I definitely got to get over to your shop, which is
107.3 WCAALP FM.
I look forward to being over there. And once again, guys, it was a plum pleasing pleasure having you on the show. We appreciate you, and hopefully you got to come back soon. Until next time, it's about the triple E's: education, empowerment, entrepreneurship. And remember this, don't hear about making a difference. You need to be about making a difference. This is Inez Bosch's baby boy, H. Bosch Jr., doing what I'm made to believe.
That was WOOC correspondent H. Bosch Jr. interviewing Andrew Ali Willis, president of Local 102 ECWA Construction Union. He was joined by his business partner, Elijah Tillery. Stay tuned to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine for the Triple E's segments on Thursdays.
For the last several months, groups as part of the SHARE coalition have been opposing the governor's plan to build two new fracked gas turbines on Sheridan Avenue in Albany to power the Empire State Plaza. SHARE stands for Sheridan Hollow Alliance for Renewable Energy. The groups have called for renewable energy to be used instead, particularly there's a call for geothermal. After much delay, the state finally was forced to release the details of their proposal to the public and to scientists, and SHARE found that the actual details differed from what the public had been told by the New York Power Authority. The afternoon before SHARE held a news conference to release their findings, and the New York Power Authority released a statement that they were now going to explore renewable alternatives. WOOC has part of the SHARE news conference with Mert Simpson, the co-chair of the group, and Keith Hsu, who's heading up the science team.
Merton Simpson, and I am co-chair of the Sheridan Hollow Alliance for Renewable Energy, SHARE. I'm also the county legislator for the 2nd Legislative District. And we're here today to deliver our analysis of the governor's proposed fracked natural gas microgrid that's slated to be in the old ANSYS location at 79 Sheridan Avenue. Interestingly enough, within about 2 to 4 hours of our release of the advisory for this press event, NYPA came out with a statement that talked about their willingness to explore alternative energy possibilities. What concerns us about that is we have given them our analysis of the request for proposal with a detailed explication of the disinformation and the errors that were in it. And we know that they're sophisticated people. And so the fact that they didn't explicitly commit to a request for proposal for renewable alternatives and an environmental impact study gives me concern, because if you break down their statement, it basically boils down to they're going to stop, look, and listen. What we require is action. What we don't want to happen is a release of the contract for the proposed fracking natural gas plant at the 79 Sheridan Avenue location. If we didn't have the history of the Answers Plan, it would be bad. But if you realize the harm that was done to that community, and you do an analysis of the promises that were made for the old Answers Plan, the caution that was given to the community that there was nothing to actually be concerned about, and it was only after dark, dark debris from garbage wafted into the snow on the mansion that they actually decided to close that plant. A lot of the same foibles that happened in terms of promises that were not kept are being replicated now. And so in the legacy of what happened with Answers, it's difficult for us to understand how the governor can square his goals for renewable energy, for divesting from frack fossil fuels, with the proposal to impose frack gas on a community that has already really been decimated. Even if the proposed goals could be met by the frack plant, it still would be a very modest decrease in the detrimental toxins that people are exposed to. But on careful analysis, their proposed goals really can't be met by the data that's in the request for proposal. There are some people that are given the indication from NYPA that they have a dedicated purpose for the plant that is supposedly for resilience, to be an independent hog in the case of an emergency, and that they're going to reduce the toxins. But even if to do it the right way, it would take an additional year, for example. You have to think about the implications of somebody born 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, living for a 20, 30-year period with daily exposure to carcinogenic emissions and other toxins. Clearly, we've documented a whole host of alternatives that could be done here in Albany. And what we're asking for is simple due diligence to do a thorough request for proposal so that experts in the field can actually compete to do what we know has been done in several other places. The NYPA statement yesterday really doesn't commit to concrete action, and it lends itself to interpretation for whatever you want to make of it. So what we're asking for is a commitment from the governor not to let the frack microgrid contract, honest, diligent request for proposal from experts, which we know can yield a viable alternative, and then the Department of Environmental Conservation to supervise an environmental impact statement on the results. Nothing less than that will be satisfactory to us. The notion that NYPA can either do it their way or won't do it at all is not acceptable to us. People have been damaged in the past. People are presently being damaged, and they'll be damaged in the future. So we're prepared to do everything necessary to make sure that the state fulfills its responsibility to be good stewards of the earth and to take care of an environmental justice community that has suffered too much in the past and is still suffering by the emissions.
My name is Keith Hsu. I am a technical advisor, electrical engineer, volunteering with a group of science folks that are looking at the proposal that NYPA has put forward. We've done a substantive analysis of what has been proposed, and we gave it to NYPA. Today, we're going to be delivering a letter to the governor that includes that analysis to really show what's wrong with the proposed project that's out there right now that NYPA has proposed. We are glad that NYPA has said that they are willing to look at renewable alternatives, but we're not ready to celebrate. We're going to celebrate when this project that's been currently proposed, which is a frack gas project, is replaced. When the proposed CHP project is replaced with one that truly lives up to the commitments of the governor toward renewable energy and protecting an environmental justice community. So the best way to move forward in the right direction is to have a good understanding of what's wrong with the current proposal. That's what we've done with our analysis, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about what those issues are. First of all, I need to say that if this project is proposed, the CHP, Combined Heat and Power Project, is put forward, the state, the capital of New York, will be receiving 90% of its electricity from fracked gas burned in Sheridan Hollow. It will be receiving 100% of its heating and cooling from fracked gas burned in Sheridan Hollow. And it will be burning 50% more, or almost 50% more fracked gas in Sheridan Hollow. We know there's a better way than doing that. And it also perpetuates disproportionate exposure of a community that has suffered long enough to the harms of pollution. NYPA has said that their current proposal is a great benefit for efficiency. We've examined that, and we now know it to be not true.
That was from the SHARE news conference on Tuesday, calling for a new proposal to be developed for renewable energy to power the Empire State Plaza rather than the burning of fracked gas. The last speaker was Keith Hsu, an engineer working with SHARE. Up first was Albany legislator Mert Simpson, co-chair of SHARE. Stay tuned to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine to hear updates on the progress of SHARE. For those just tuning in, I'm Christian Tucker.
And I'm Megan Marone. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM Troy. To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org.
WOOC labor correspondent Willie Terry is back on the show this week to discuss the intertwining history of labor movements and Black History Month.
Good evening. This is WOOC Labor Talk, and my name is Willie Terry. Today we will continue our special February program honoring Black labor during Black History Month. Now, in this segment, we will discuss the general role and treatment of African-American workers in labor history. And we'll do this in four areas. One, what was the general role of Black workers? And two, how were Black workers treated in labor history? And three, what is the status of Black workers now? And four, what do histories say about the future of Black labor? Now, before I get started, I just want to backtrack to say that African-American history didn't start in America, and Black labor history didn't start in America. Enslaved Black workers were at work in Africa developing civilizations before they were forced to come to America. Their role was defined as slaves, and they were to work, work, and work for a lifetime. And listen to S. Sarah Geisel. In her slave narrative says,
Ashura has had a hard life. Just work, work and work. I never know nothing but work. I never knows what it was to rest. I just work all the time, from morning till late at night. Work in the field, chop wood, hoe comb. Sometimes I feels like my back surely break. Honey, you can't know what a time I had. All cold and hungry. Oh no, I ain't telling no lie. It's the gospel truth, the gospel truth, the gospel truth.
These enslaved Black workers were not paid for their labor. They were labor. And they were a form of capital investments to generate more money or wealth for the slave owners and the capitalist elites. Now, after the so-called freedom of the enslaved workers by the Emancipation Proclamation or the Civil War or the 13th Amendment, and to quote Stubb Terkel, quote, he said, the USA and the land of the free and the home of the brave for all, yet race consciousness and racism pervade every fiber of our social existence. Black workers, after their so-called freedom, faced severe racism and discrimination in America and the labor movement. Black workers' status of being enslaved by individual masters was replaced by a condition of being enslaved to a white society. in the North and in the South. The white elite created in the North and South a new system of neo-slavery called Jim Crow segregation. Now, access to the significant wealth-building resources were not open to the technical free black workers. White workers incorporated racism into their worldview, and they used it to advance themselves. White workers became part of the system to oppress black workers by creating race riots, police repression, and exclusion from unions, and better jobs, and housing, and education that kept black workers from advancing socially and economically. Racism came not just from the top, but from the bottom up, instituting a system of divide and rule, often policed by white workers. White workers, instead of attacking the rich capitalists or the slave masters, they focused their resentment on black workers. White supremacy placed white workers in privileged positions relative to black workers, reserving skilled jobs, education, and state subsidies for white only, and prohibiting blacks from advancing. Numerous of unions contribute to the degraded economic status of black workers by excluding them from membership, from apprenticeship programs, and from skilled jobs. In the skilled trades and the railroad brotherhood, whites had long used unions to keep blacks out of that. Even whites in low-wage industries such as textile, which excluded blacks except for cleaning jobs, often benefited from the color line. Now, many of them could afford to hire black domestic servants because blacks made such miserable wages and were excluded from factory jobs. Black workers were generally relegated to the worst jobs and paid the lowest wages. Employers fought unionization by racially segregating workers and threatening whites with replacements by black workers. The segregated system of labor organizations that pitted workers against one another, white unionized workers often resorted to violence to drive black workers out of jobs. White labor leaders in the union movement that expanded from the mid-1800s to the 1960s collaborated and maintained the system of black workers' exclusion and white workers' privilege. White union leaders often outspoken in their ideological racism and commitment to the racial barriers. Now, in the civil rights struggles that came along later, labor was little to be seen. Support and money came from several large unions, including the United Auto Workers and the steel workers. Few unions, however, attempted to mobilize their membership to participate in the freedom struggle. The American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organization, known as the AFL-CIO, gave verbal support, but unions with large black memberships, such as the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and the United Auto Workers and 1199, were aggressively active in their support. Now, many white unionists, like other white Americans, they deserted the freedom movement when it began demanding an equal place at the table or calling for the restructuring of the political and economic system and an end to white privilege and racism. But due to the racism and discrimination in the history of the American labor movement, black workers had to organize caucuses and unions to fight for their rights. And they dramatically eliminated many of the discriminatory practices on the job and in the labor movement. Now, some of these organizations that organized were the Waiter Protected Association of New York, the Baltimore Colored Caucus Trades, the Alabama Negro Labor Union, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, the Southern Tenant Farmers Union, the Colored National Labor Union, the National Negro Congress, the National Negro Labor Council, Negro American Labor Council, League of Struggle for Negro Rights, the Dodge Revolutionary Union Movement, known as DRUM, the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, and the Coalition of Black Trade Unions, known as CBTU, and the American Negro Labor Congress, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. Now, the history of racism and discrimination on black workers was so bad over the past AFL and the CIO at their convention, their leaders acknowledged, quote, the ugly history of racism in the labor movement and the union. Now, how did they respond? Well, they responded by creating a labor commission on racial and economic justice to examine how issues of race can be better addressed by its union membership, as well as call for all unions in the AFL-CIO to diversify its members and leadership. The future of black labor is bleak, and I hate to say that. But despite of all the progressive things the labor movement has done, it has failed to adequately address the major contradictions of racism and class. History say that the labor movement must convince white workers that black workers are not their enemy, and they should unite with them to aggressively struggle against our real enemies, the racist, capitalist, imperialistic system. History says that the labor movement must take a more organized and active role in the progressive community struggles for justice. Black Lives Matter. The labor movement must develop a more aggressive struggle against institutional racism and white privileges in all its forms in and out of the labor movement. And finally, history says that the labor movement must do massive grassroots organizing of workers in unions and workers not in unions, with the understanding that there would have to be a theoretical and an ideological struggle in and out of the labor movement at the same time. This must be done so workers can understand how racism has been and continue to be used as a tool to divide and co-opt workers' struggles. Workers must understand that history predicts the destruction of the world if we continue to allow a system based on profit values rather than human values to destroy the world water resources, to pollute the air and land, and continue to develop massive nuclear weapons for war. If we continue this, then the major question or the major contradiction is how much time we have. I want to kind of end this discussion by quoting two of the most celebrated black leaders in history of the black workers' movement, and that is Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And a lot of time, you know, we celebrate them, but we kind of leave them froze in history. But there was two leaders that was changing. And I want to quote Malcolm X first. Malcolm X said that you can't have capitalism without racism, unquote. And he also said that the system in this country cannot produce freedom for African Americans. It's impossible for this system, this economic system, this political system, this social system, this system, period. It's impossible for this system as it stands to produce freedom right now for the black man in this country. That's Malcolm X. And Martin Luther King, who was also changing, quote, said, "Capitalism does not permit an even flow of economic resources. With this system, a small privileged few are rich beyond conscience, and almost all others are doomed to be poor at some level. That's the way the system works. And since we know that the system will not change the rules, we are going to have to change the system." This is Willie Terry of WOOC, Labor Talk, and I want to thank you for tuning in, and I hope you tune in again. And I want to end by saying, "A luta continua," which means the struggle continues.
That was WOOC correspondent Willie Terry reminding us of the importance of Black History Month. Stay tuned to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on Thursday nights for pieces on history and labor with Willie Terry.
Tonight we're joined by WOOC youth correspondents Ariana Young and Trayvon Votrin. They're back in the studio as part of a weekly series that we have in terms of hearing from youth voices from the Capital Region. Ariana is a sophomore, and Trey, what grade are you in?
Sixth
grade. And Ariana is going to be asking Trey questions about his self-published newsletter, TV News.
Okay, so Trey, what is TV News exactly?
TV News is like, it's basically like any ordinary newspaper, but it basically covers like what most people don't cover, like the Times Union, like stuff like that. So it covers like some stories that they don't cover. Like it covers the news, your not the news. Well, yeah, it covers the news. But it covers your weather. It covers activities that youth can do in the Capital District and stuff like that.
Would you say that TV news is specific to your neighborhood?
Yeah, because I mostly focus on the Capital District.
Okay, and how are you changing TV news?
Well, I'm changing TV news into YMS News, and YMS News stands for Youth Media Sanctuary, because I want it to be more involved with the sanctuary.
Would you let other youth interns write for TV news?
Yes, that's why I'm changing it to Youth Media Sanctuary, so it's not only Trayvon Voltron.
Okay, so for other kids out there that you may have inspired, why is TV news important to you or in general?
TV news, well, aka YMS News now, is like important because it like basically gives like more things to do for like youth like me and you. Mm-hmm. Basically, like we can go on there, edit, talk about what's happening in the community and stuff like that.
All right, and so, like, who helps you with construction of TV news?
Mostly everybody here at the sanctuary because they tell me about stuff that's happening. They tell me about stuff that's happening.
So do you have first of all, are you going to hang on to the early editions of TV News? Because it's interesting how things evolve. So this started as your project. TV stands for Trayvon Voltron. So now it's translating into something else, Youth Media Sanctuary News. Are you going to maintain your own individual news and publication outlet or just hang on to the original copies of this idea and look at the evolution of a Trey project?
All the old TV news and all the new YMS news, like everything is going to be going on the sanctuary website. So you can always go there and look at all the old articles that came out, like my first one and stuff. And also you can come down here to the sanctuary and see it.
Oh, right. Just tell us where everybody can get it.
You can come down to the sanctuary. And also
every
online.
What day, though?
Oh, every Monday at 7:07.
That's when the new one comes out. Yeah. That's what I meant. Thank you, Trey. Any final words?
Thank you for having me here in the studios.
No problem.
And also thanks to the all.
People can pick up a copy of The Alt this week, and our very own WOOC intern Trayvon Voltron is the cover of The Alt this week, and details of all of the polyvalent work he does at the sanctuary is listed out in this edition. Now we're handing over the conversation to Ariana Young and Aaron Pinder, who are going to be talking about history.
Hello, Aaron. How are you?
Stay and bless yourself.
Bless as I should. So, how do you feel about only celebrating Black History Month in February?
I think it's kind of wrong because, for example, like in school, we only talk about slavery or any type of stuff involving Black people only in books or like in some type of, just in books generally. But after that, like after we read the books and after February is over, we don't learn about any Black like people or any Black like inventors or anything in school.
Okay. And why do you think that African Americans protest for specific things?
I think they protest because like we're not being heard enough that lead us to like express that anger or like passion into protest so we can be heard by the government and that we want to change in the society.
And you know how Black people, in particular, are stereotyped a lot. So do you think that themselves create their own stereotypes?
I think, honestly, yes. Because, for example, if you think of a Black person, you think, you know, gangs and, you know, just ghetto, you know. But when you think of a white person, you just think class and educated and, like, having all the things that a Black person can afford. And then when you create all that stereotype, we keep following that stereotype of being, you know, only that one, you know, person that we can be. Like, just for example, like somebody's like told her I was acting white. Like, I talk white sometimes. And I don't think you can act a color. Just like me saying I'm going to act blue tomorrow and talk, you know, red next week. It makes no sense. You just can't act a color. You just can't live by that stereotype. And just being, like, put in that stereotype by society, you got to follow that stereotype.
Okay, now to switch gears into the, like, the prison system. Do you think why do you think that prisons are filled with more black prisoners?
Just like the stereotypes, like Trayvon Martin, you know, they assume that we're bad or like we're doing something bad. So when you assume something bad, you just, that you're just mind of all black person being bad leads to you assume that we're going to do something bad or like not, something not good to society. For like, as I said, Trayvon Martin, he would just walk in, going home with Skittles and a juice, and Zimmerman just shot him because he looked suspicious.
And how do you feel about black people or African Americans being wrongfully prosecuted?
I think, like, for like another example, like Leisha Evans, she's she got arrested by the cops for just peacefully just speaking her mind with no violence or anything, which leads to her, like, being prosecuted just by speaking her mind. Because as a black person, you can't have an opinion in society. Because if you have an opinion, you're acting for too much. Like, the government or, like, the white people already gave us, like, freedom and stuff. It's like, if we protest more, like, we're acting for too much. Like, we already got the freedom from slavery. So if we keep acting for stuff, it's like we're acting for too much from the government.
And why do you think that it's hard for people who have been incarcerated to find a job?
It's hard for them because you just got out of jail. And especially, like, being black and just being out of jail, it's hard because if you can't find a job after being coming out from jail, you turn to drugs or selling drugs to actually help yourself because you don't feel like society can accept you or, like forgive you what you did. So after you already, like, consume yourself from not being forgiven by society or yourself, you turn to, like, the drugs and violence and stuff, which also leads you back in prison or dead.
Do you think that people have to tell their story more to overcome shame? Like, thinking about incarceration and, like you're saying, you know, the social stigmas that people then face. Do you think it's important for people in general to just tell the truth of their story?
That's a good question because, like, I think, like, people who's been incarcerated should help out the young people these days because they're so evolved around the gangs and, like, drugs and stuff. So if you speak your, like, help them understand that what you did as a teenager is not going to help you as an adult because you've already been through that stuff. You've already seen it. So since they're in still that stage as being a teenager and being going through that phase, you should at least talk to them or, like, just express that pain that you went through by just being in prison or causing yourself to make the bad choices so they won't have to keep making that bad choices to be in jail like you did.
Well, any final words from Ariana, from Aaron? Any final wishes or ideas for the audience?
Just out of trouble, you know. Just don't do drugs, you know. Step the streets, you know, because it ain't a good time. This generation, it's really not that good.
Yeah, you guys, and just put God first. Ain't he good?
All the time.
All right.
That was Ariana Young and Aaron Pinder speaking on history, and they're going to be back in the studio every Thursday. We're going to have voices from the Capital Region. They are WOOC interns who have been working to craft questions around certain conversations on the radio. And now we have WOOC correspondent Steve Pierce. He interviewed the Charlton Singleton is the name of the person that he interviewed from the band Ranky Tanky. And they're going to be performing at Proctor's on Friday night.
Ranky Tanky. Let's see. The band, I guess, technically we've been doing this for about maybe 3 years now, but in the last maybe year and a half is when things have really started to pick up. We have known each other for quite a long time and have been, you know, I guess doing our own musical things for a number of years. Maybe about somewhere around 1998 or 1999, myself and Kevin on bass and Quentin on drums and Clay on guitar, we had a little band here in town called The Gradual Lean that we used to play jazz standards and our own original tunes and stuff like that. But then we all kind of did our separate things. Like Clay moved to New York. Quentin was out on the road quite a bit with a lot of major jazz artists. Kevin and I were playing in different organizations or playing in different bands. But on occasion, we would all get back together and we would play, you know. But about 3 years ago, Clay came up with this idea or with this concept and sort of presented the music of our area. And that's sort of the beginnings of it. And then about 2 years ago, you know, we said we need a dynamic singer, and you know, there was a logical choice was Kiana Parler right here in our hometown. So that's the basic quick version of the story, I should say.
So that's your own creation myth. Tell us about the Gullah culture that your musical inspiration derives from.
Oh well, the Gullah culture that dates back to a long, long, long time ago before any of us were even thought of, probably before any of our great-grandparents were even thought of. You know, around here, everybody knows the Gullah culture because, you know, we're right in the thick of it. The Gullah Geechee Corridor stretches from the sort of the southern, eastern shore of North Carolina, and it goes all the way down to the northern part of Florida. But the main concentration is really from, I'd say, from McClellanville, South Carolina, all the way down through Georgia. And here in Charleston, where, you know, a lot of people just really believe that this was the, you know, major landing spot for slaves that were being brought, you know, into the United States. You know, they lived on these barrier islands. And they maintained their culture. They maintained a lot of their beliefs and practices, whether it was religion, whether it was entertainment, whether it was the way they cooked.
That was Charlton Singleton from Ranky Tanky, who was performing and speaking by phone in his car, and he's going to be at Proctor's Theater on Friday night, and he's performing with the group Ranky Tanky. Please look online for more information about the band and the culture that the music represents. That concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Megan Marone.
And I'm Christian Tucker. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page.
As a reminder, WOOC 105.3 is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org or stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07, held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.